Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Gittin Daf Nun Ches. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 10 lines from the top of Daf Nun Ches. Before we begin the actual Gemara, we glance at the side where we have a nosei, a topic heading, Ti'ur Shel Yoifyom Shel Bnei Tzion, a description of the beauty of the residents, the inhabitants of Zion. Under the Mivneh heading, a volcano shape will appear. These shapes, which appear in the Gemara, are shlavim, are stages. B'havonas ha-posuk, b'nei tzion ha-yikar ma-mesloim b'paz. A posuk from Echa will appear, and in order to understand it, we go through a couple of stages. So now the Gemara. B'nei Tzion ha-yikorim ha-mesuloim b'paz. My mesuloim b'paz. What does that refer to? Ilema da'avu mechapi b'piza. If mesuloim b'paz means they were covered in piza. Piza is a type of gold, a very expensive and rare type of gold. V'ho'amri debay Rabbi Shiloh, but has it not been taught by the yeshiva of Rabbi Shiloh, tarti miskeli istiri piza nochus b'alma. Two measures of this kind of gold, this special gold, Rashi says istiri sloyim. So it's two, miskeli is a weight, istiri sela. Sela is a type of weight. It's also a coin, but it has a certain amount of weight to it. So you have two istri weights of Pisa. Nochus Balma means descended unto the world. Chada Baromi v'chada Bekuliyama. One measure is in Rome, and the other measure is in the rest of the world. The indication being that there isn't enough Pisa in Tzion to account for the Bnei Tzion to be covered in it. Ela, the Gemara continues, Shehoyu meganin es apaz biyofion. What the Pasuk is describing is that the beauty of the people of Zion, the Jewish people, the people lived in Yerushalayim, eclipsed the shine, the gleam of gold, of the beauty of gold. Meikara, and to illustrate this, the Gemara gives us makes a point. Initially, Chashivi de Roimi, the important officials of Rome, Havu Nakti Bilyona de Gushpanka Umishamshi Arsaihu. Maybe just a word of introduction, and you can see in the Chumash itself, if I'm not mistaken, it was in Parshas Vayetze, in Chumash Brachos, where Yaakov Avinu receives a measure of sheep and goats from Lavan, and he arranges for their reproduction. And during the mating of the male and female, he placed sticks in the ground that when the animals would view the sticks, the way the sticks were carved, were shaped, were etched out, that would influence the offspring. So what we're trying to say here is that there is a relationship between what the couple see when mating takes place and the resultant offspring. So with that in mind, the officials of Rome, when they were having intimacy with their women, they would have some beautiful images. Rashi Bilyonu Gushpanka, the Gushpanki Rashi Setsuras Noisha Bechoisman. They would have these beautiful images that appeared on their seals. Kadesh tis abarno kenegdon, so that the resultant pregnancy would be a function of these things having been viewed at that time. So initially, the chashiva de Romoi, the officials of Rome, used to engage in intimacy in the presence of these beautiful images. Mikan v'eilech, however, after the capture of Israel, Maisu b'nei Yisrael v'asi b'kara de parayu, they would bring Jewish people, tie them to the legs of their Roman beds, umeshamshi, and the Romans would engage in intimacy in the presence of these Jewish people, these beautiful, handsome-looking people. Omar lei chad lechavrei, two people who were studying, one said to the other, "Ha hechok siva, where is there a reference in the Torah to this this indignation, this disparagement that the Jewish people would be subjected to this kind of fate?" Omar lei, the pasuk says. The other one answered, "Gam kol choli v'chol makah sheloi kosev b'sefer haTorah hazois." This is a pasuk in the Toichucha section, in the section of curses in Sefer Dvorim, Parshas Kisavo, which says that, which states that all illnesses and afflictions that are not written in the Torah will be cast upon the Jewish people. So this type of indignation is not something that's in the list of various sicknesses and fates, and nevertheless there's a hint to it in this pasuk. Omar, so the other one asked, "Kamo marchikno miduchta plon?" How far away in the study of Chumash is this pasuk? I haven't gotten to that yet. You're citing a pasuk that I haven't gotten to. Omar lei, "Ingid pusto upalga." Ingid indicates ma'at, a little bit. It's a little bit further from where you are. Pusto upalga daf vochetzia, a column and a half away. Omar lei, so the other one says, "I matoi legabe, had I reached that, lo, it's the rifi loch, then I wouldn't have needed you." In other words, I would have learned that pasuk, and I would have understood that pasuk is in fact hinting to this indignation. Omar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel Mishum Rabbi Shimon Ben Gamliel, "My dichtiv." The what is meant by the pasuk in Eicha Perek Gimel Pasuk Nun Aleph, "Eini Oilalon Lenafshi Mikol Benois Iri Arba Meis Botei Knesius Hay Bekrach Beitar." There were 400 synagogues in the city of Beitar. And in each synagogue, there were 400 children teachers, elementary teachers. And each one of the teachers had 400 young students in front of them. And when the enemy came, they pierced them staves. And when the enemy overcame them and captured them, they wrapped them in their scrolls and set them to fire. On the side of the Gemara, we have a Mivne, a structural note, which features a triangle. These are Arba Maisim, three incidents. Gimel Rishonim Hakshurim L'Shvuyim. The first three are associated with captives. The fourth triangle, you'll notice we have it. We've featured it with a slight alteration in it to set it apart from the first three Maisim that have the issue of captivity in common. Under the Nosei, the topic heading, we read Maisa Sheboy Rabbi Yeshua ben Hananya Poyde Yeled Yefet Toyar. We'll see an incident in which Rabbi Yeshua ben Hananya redeems from captivity a beautiful boy. Shevemeshach Hashanim Nia Atan Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha, who in the course of time grew into the famous Tana Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha. The Gemara. Tana Rabbanan Maisib Rabbi Yeshua ben Hananya Sheholach Lekrach Godol Sheberoimi. He visited a great city in Rome. Omru lo tinok echod yesh beves asurim. He was informed that there was a child in prison. Yefei naim v'toivroi, beautiful eyes, handsome appearance. Ukvusosov sedurus lo tatalim, and his the locks of hair are set in order upon his head. Halach v'omar al pesach beis asurim. So Rabbi Yeshua ben Hananya stood at the entrance to the prison. Omar. And he said, "Mi nosan lemeshisa yankiv Yisrael levoizizim." Who is it that has cast the Jewish people to trampling, and Yisrael and the Jewish people to plundering? Ono isu tino v'yomar. The child said, "Halo Hashem zu chotanu lo v'lo avu bedrochav haloich v'lo shamu b'toyroso." Well, of course, it's the Almighty unto whom we have sinned. We haven't willingly followed his ways, nor have we heeded his Torah. So that the boy understood that the fate suffered by the Jewish people is not something random, but rather it's a result of our sinning. Omar, so Rabbi Yeshua said, "Muftachani boy shemur Rabbi Yisrael." I have confidence that he will be a legal decisor amongst the Jewish people. Ha'avoda shenizoz mikan. He swears. Ha'avoda is an expression indicating taking an oath. He swears, "I am not leaving this spot. Ad she'avdenu b'chol momon she'poiskan alav. I will redeem him with whatever amount they decide." Omru, it was said, "Lo zoz misham ad she'poda b'momon harbe." That Rabbi Yeshua did not leave until he redeemed him, successfully redeemed him with a lot of money. And not much time went by until he became a legal decisor. Umanu Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha. And that boy grew into the famous Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha. Omar Rav Yehuda Marav, Maise Bivnoi Bitel Shel Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha. And now in an almost continuation fashion, we now focus on the son and daughter of this great man, who, by the way, was also a Kohen Gadol. She Nishbu Lishnei Adonim. These two children of Rabbi Shmuel were taken captive by two separate masters. Liyomim Nizdavu Shneim B'Mokom Echad. On one day, these two masters and captors met up with one another in one spot. Ze Omer, one claimed, Yeshli Eved Shein Kiyofi B'cholam, I have a slave, the beauty of which you won't find in the world. Ze Omer, Yeshli Shivcha Shein B'chol Olam Kuloi Kiyofya. The other one said, "Well, I have a bondmaid whose beauty is not to be found anywhere." Omru, so they decided, Bo V'nasim Ze Lazet. Why not have them wed with one another? Unechalik bevlados, and will split the offspring. Hichnisum lecheder, so they put the two into a room. Ze yosha bekeren zovis vezu yoshva bekeren zovis ze. This one sat in this corner, and the boy sat in this corner, and the girl sat in the other corner. Ze omer, the boy says, "Ani kayin ben kehanim gedolim, I'm the son. I'm a kohen." Who's the son of the high priest, Esa Shivcha? Should I end up marrying a bondmaid? It's a bondmaid, a Shivcha is also to a rank and file Jew, all the more so to a Kohen who has additional marital restrictions. Vizosomeris, and she said, "Ani Kohenes Bas Kohanim Gedolim, I'm a the daughter of high priests, and I'll say, Levin, should I end up wedding with a slave?"
Uvachu kol alayla, and each one cried all night. Kevan shola hamud hashachar, when dawn arrived, it was light. Hikiru zeh etzeh, they recognized one another, brother and sister. Venoflu zeh al zeh, they fell upon one another. Vego b'vchiyat shiyotza nishmosan, and they cried out in a wailing cry until they expired, until they died. As we go on, we have a new marking on the side under the Mivneh heading, Havlotas. We're going to highlight the expression Ve'alein Kinen Yirmiyo, and upon them, Yirmiyo, the prophet Jeremiah, said his dirge. Now, one has to note that the story we just had with the children of Rabbi Yishmael ben Elisha, you're doing with a time period at the end of the second Beis HaMikdash. Yirmiyo was a prophet at the end of the first Beis HaMikdash. You had a gap of hundreds of years between them. But nevertheless, you're dealing with something that's it's a dirge, it's prophetic, and it can be applied to a number of situations. In this case, the Gemara wants to focus Yirmiyo's dirge as a reference to the story we just read. So Valen Kainan Yirmiyo, upon them Yirmiyo mourned, said a dirge, Al Eila ni Bochia Eini Yordamayam. Upon these I cry, my eyes shed water, tears. Amar Reish Lakish, Maisa Beisha Achas, Vitsofnas Bas Pniel Shmo. An incident involving a woman whose name was Tsofnas Bas Peniel, after the brackets, which you can see is a basically a line, the Gemara continues with the with what happened to her. In the brackets, the Gemara describes her the name. So reading the brackets, Tsofnas shall call Tsofim Biofya. The name Tsofnas is a reference to Tsofet. Tsofet is to look upon. Everyone gazed upon her beauty. Bas Peniel, Bitel Shekein Godol Sheshimesh Lifnei Lifnim. The word Peniel, like the word Penim, it has to do with the inner sanctum. She was the daughter of a Kohen Godol who once a year on Yom Kippur would enter the Lifnei Lifnim, the inner sanctum, the Kodesh HaKodoshim. So now this woman, Tzofas Bas Peniel, she is Alel Bo Shaboy Kol Laila. The captors raped her all night. L'mochir Bisha Shiva Chalukim. The next day, the captor dressed her in seven garments, Votzila Mochra, and took her out for sale. It's to sell as a slave. Ba'adam Echad, Shemachur B'Yoser. A very ugly man came by. Omar Lo, we'll call him the customer, says to the captor, Hareini Esyofya. I want you to show me her beauty. Omar Lo, the master, the captor says, Reka, you foolish man, you empty one. Imato Roitze Likach Kach. If you want to buy her. She'en Kiyofya Bechol Olam Kulo. There is no one as beautiful as she. Omar Lo, Afal Pikein. The customer says, even so. If Shita Shisha Chalukim, he removed six layers of garments. Ushmi, the seventh one, Kor Asav and Ispasha Ba'efer. She ripped off the seventh one and rolled in ash. Omra Lefonov, and she said as follows, Ribonu Shalolam, Imolenu Lochasta, if upon us you don't have compassion, Al Kedusha Shimcha Gibor Loma Lotochus, why not have compassion and mercy for your own holy and lofty name. V'olel Kainin Yirmiyo, and regarding her, Yirmiyo was Mekainin, Basami Figrisak, Vispalshi Boefer, Evel Yochid Asiloch, Mispad Tamurim, Ki Pisoim Yovo Hashodet Olenu. In the Pasuk, you see a description of Basami, the daughter of my people, gird yourself in sackcloth and roll in ash. a mourning of an only child, and a eulogy of bitterness. For with suddenness there came upon us the marauder, the enemy. Now in the pasuk it says Yovo Hashodeid Olenu. Olecha lo ne'amar elo olenu. The word upon us doesn't appear in the singular, upon you, but rather it says upon us. Kivyochol olai ve'olecha bo hashodeid. It's as if to say that the enemies have come upon me and upon you. In other words, not just the victim, the Jewish victim is the victim, but upon you, upon the Almighty also comes forth the enemy. Omar Vira, Omar Rav, Mai Dichtiv, Vyoshku Gever Ubesoi Vish Vinachlosoi. Maise Ba'odam Echad, Shenosan Einov Be'eshis Rabo, Vishulio de Nagrihave. There was an incident with a man that cast his eyes, his lustful eyes, upon the wife of his own teacher. And the individual, the lustful individual here happens to be a Shulya de Nagri, means he was the student of a Nagar, of a carpenter. He was studying, was an apprentice carpenter. Pam achas utzruch luvos. It was on a certain occasion, the master teacher had to borrow money. Omar loy, the student says, shagar ishtachotzli valvena. You know what? Send your wife to me, and I'll give her the money. Shiger yishtoi etzlo. So the teacher sent his wife to the student in anticipation of her getting money to bring home. Shoyimo shlosh yomim. She stayed there 3 days. Kidam ubo etzlo. The husband came to the student, Omar lo, and asked, Ishti sheshigarti loch eichoni. My wife that I sent you, where is she? Omar lo, the student says, Ani petarti li alter. I sent her immediately back to you. Veshamati shati noikis nisalalu boba derech. And I heard rumors that the youth defiled her, they raped her on the way. Omar lo, Maya says, the husband says, what am I going to do now? Omar lo, imata shomel atzosi girsha. If you want to hear my advice, I would say divorce her. Omar lo, so the husband says, but ksubosim ruba. If I divorce, I'll have to pay her ksuba, the financial guarantee that a woman receives from her husband upon her in the event of divorce. That's going to cost me a lot of money. Omar lo, so the student says, don't worry about that. Ani alvacha, v'tein lo ksuba. So I'll loan you the amount required and pay her the ksuba. Omar zev v'girsha, he arose and divorced her. Holachu v'nosanet, that Talmud, realizing that she's now divorced, went and married her. Kevon shigia zmanoi v'lo hoya lo leforo. When the time came to pay up the debt, The former husband didn't have the means of paying it up. Omar lo, so the student said, "Ba v'asei imi b'chovcha." You know what? You work for me as payment for your debt. V'hoyu heim yoshvim v'oichlim v'shoisim. The student and the woman were sitting and eating and drinking. V'hu ayoimedu mashkelim, and the former husband was there serving them. For the mois noishus meinov, and tears were flowing forth from his eyes. For noiflus bekoisin, and falling into their cups. The al oisusha nischatem gizar din, and at that moment the verdict was sealed. The amri law, and another version is al shteip silois bener echad. This is a euphemism. It's an analogy, but it's a reference to the sin of a married woman being violated. The Rashi is quite terse over here, so it could be that according to the second version, if it's a reference to the same incident, that there was no divorce, or that she had been violated by the student even before she was actually divorced. So that you have shtei psilos means two wicks, benerech, or in one candle. The ner is a receptacle that holds oil in which you light wicks. So two wicks, maybe in this case, be two men, bener echad, with one woman. She was Eishasi, she was still married. And at that point, the heavenly verdict was signed. And in the context of these agodas, the verdict for destruction. At this point, we've completed the Agadic section that began on Daf Nun Hei Omid Beis. And now we make reference to that which was taught in the Mishnah. Lokach min ha-sikrikon v'chulei. The Mishnah featured that if a person bought a piece of land from a sikrikon, he was a criminal that would threaten people with execution, with murder, and in order to save their lives, so in this case we'll talk about the Jew, in order to save his life, would offer the sikrikon a piece of land just to leave him alone. And the Mishnah mentions that if a person, a purchaser, approached a sikrikon to buy that land, and then he would turn to the original owner, and in anticipation of making a deal with him also, the Mishnah said that the deal is off. Mekhoi botel. The idea being that the original owner lost the land against his will, and the fact that he's seconding the motion, he's doing so only out of fear, but not out of a sincere desire to have the purchaser acquire the land. So the Mishnah ruled, Mekhoi Botel. This, of course, is because the original owner is planning that though today the Sikrikon will sell it to this purchaser, tomorrow I'm going to get my land back from this guy. So the fact that the owner signed on to the sale that was executed by the sikrikon is no indication of his acceptance of that deal. The topic heading on the side indicates, under the nosei we've written, Lefi reisha de masnis de lokach min hasikrikon de mekhoi botel. When do we say, in fact, that the Mekach is Botel? And we'll have a Machlokes, Rav, and Shmuel. So now we continue in the Gemara. Omar Rav, Loi Shonu, the din of the Mishnah that Mekho Botel, Elo di Omar Lo, where the original owner says to the purchaser, from the guy buying from the Sikrikon, he says, Leich Chazek Ukni. Rashi says, Leich Chazek Ukni b'chazoka. Chazoka is a means of acquisition. The kevon de dibur bi'almahu, since you're dealing with mere speech, iko lememar hasheni noach li. There's room to say that the original owner, the victim, is planning to deal with this purchaser. He's noach li, means easier for me to deal with than the thief. So it's under those circumstances where the original owner isn't really doing much. He's just saying, go ahead, leich chazek. Go ahead and make a kinyan chazoka, to a means of acquisition by doing some kind of formal action to the land and thereby acquire it. Avol, the Gemara goes on to say, b'shtar kona. If, however, the original owner writes a document, writes a title of deed to this fellow, the fellow will keep the land. Kani Rashi says four lines from the end. The kulehai lo hava le lemevad, so much that wasn't something that the original owner needed to do. Ilav dezavdele mecher gomor umidas, unless it represents a complete, fully acknowledged sale. The Gemara continues. Ushmuel amar af bishtar nami lo kona. Even if the original owner writes a title of deed to this purchaser, that doesn't mean he gets it. Ad sheyichtov loy achrayus, until he also writes in a guarantee that if the purchaser should lose the land, I will refund what you paid for it. We continue at the top of Amud Beis. Tanya Kavose de Shmuel. We have a Tanaic source supporting Shmuel that the kinyan is consummated or is established as a real kinyan, not just by the mere writing of a shtar on the part of the original owner, but is providing a financial guarantee for the deal. The Tanya Kavasi de Shmuel, Rabbi Yishimon ben Elozer Omer, Lokach mino isha, v'lozchazer v'lokach mino ish, mekho kayam. If a purchaser bought land from a woman, we're talking here about land that was designated to be her source of collection for the ksuba, in the event that she would be divorced or widowed, and she signed she agreed to a deal that this purchaser gets the land, and then that purchaser went to her husband and bought the land. Of course, we're talking about land that is owned by the husband, that serves as a guarantee for her ksuba. So the woman is the first one to accept the deal, and then the husband signed on. Mekho kayam. We say a deal like that is a formal deal. There was nothing pressuring the woman into agreeing to that deal. She was the first one to sign on. So it's a good deal. It stands. However, mino ish v'chazer v'lokach mino isha, mekho batel. If a person purchased the land first from the husband and then the wife signed on, that's not a deal. The deal is off. The fact that the woman signed on is only to preserve their domestic tranquility. She says, I signed on only nachas ruach asisi lebayi. I was only trying to make my husband feel good. I didn't want to upset him by objecting to the deal that he made, that he initiated. So we say the deal is up because we're dealing once again with land that's designated to pay her ksuba. However, we say the deal is off ad shetichtov loy achrayas, until she writes to the purchaser a guarantee that if he should lose the land, she will see to it that he gets compensated. If the woman goes that far, so that's beyond just an indication that she was trying to preserve domestic tranquility. Why did she go so far as to write a guarantee? It must be she's seriously accepting that deal. The Gemara asks, well, name otevei tufta d'Rav. Should we then suggest that this source is a refutation of Rav's position? Because according to Rav, even without the writing of Achrayas, the deal would be considered a concrete, final, accepted deal. The Gemara answers, Amar loch Rav. Rav will tell you when looking at this source, says, my Achrayas nami. The word Achrayas is shtar, is the mere writing of the document. The Rashi says on the top line, shtar velo achrayas nechosim. The reference to achrayas isn't a financial guarantee if anything should happen to the land that you purchased. Elo ad shetichtov loy shtar vehave lo lachrayas she'en yichud lachzor olav oid. The mere writing of the shtar on her part to the purchaser, that's the achrayas. The achrayas meaning a guarantee that she, the
the woman, the wife, will not approach the purchaser any further, claiming, hey, you know, that land is really due to me. It's really earmarked for me. So her writing of the shtar is a guarantee, is an achrayus to the purchaser that he, that she won't bother him any further. Tanu Rabbanan. Lokach minasikrikon v'ochlo shalosh shanim b'fnei bailim. A person bought land from the sikrikon, that, we'll call that potential murderer, who expropriated the land from the Jewish owner. And this purchaser used and consumed the produce from land for 3 years in the presence of the original owner. V'chozar u'mochro li'achir. And then the land was sold to an additional customer, a second purchaser. Ein le'bailim alokech sheni klum. The original owner has no claim against that subsequent purchaser. Hey chidami, what are the circumstances? And we ask, Hei deka toin v'omar minoch zavno. If the second purchaser says to the original owner, the guy I bought from, we'll call him the first purchaser, minoch zavno means he bought it from you, used it for 3 years, and therefore there is no longer any contract, any shtar. The contract, the shtar doesn't last. We don't expect people to watch their deeds for more than 3 years. Is that the story? Well, then, afilu rishon nami. Then, even the first purchaser would be victorious. Why, if that were the story, why is there the need for introducing a second purchaser in order to indicate that the original owner has no claim? We take a look at Rashi on the third line from the top. E dekotoyin le hai lokeach sheni. If the second purchaser claims minoch zavno lokeach rishon, he says to the original owner that the guy I bought from, he bought it from you. Shenosan loch revia ketakonas beisdin. The guy I bought it from gave you the quarter. That's the amount that beisdin ruled that a purchaser is to pay an original owner after the purchaser bought from the sikrikon. And, well, I bought it from the guy, from the first purchaser, who gave you the money that Basin says you should receive. And then he used the land for 3 years. The guy that bought it from you used it for 3 years. In your presence, you were aware of that. The sulom atziyomar lehai. And at that point, this guy cannot say, "Achsi shtora." Oh, well, show me the title, show me the document. The tvei mitlosu shonin lo mizdari nish b'shtora. People don't watch their documents more than 3 years. Well, if that were the case, my iriyah chazu rocha liacher. Why does the Tanaic source say that the first purchaser sold it to a second purchaser? The original owner, after he consumes it for 3 years, the original purchaser could say, I paid you, the original owner, what I was supposed to pay, the revia, the quarter extra that Beisdin ruled for me to pay you, and I did, I paid you. I used it for 3 years, and 3 years have gone by, therefore you can't ask me for the shtar. So if the circumstances were like we just described, why did the Tanaic source introduce a second purchaser? Even the original purchaser would have been able to make the claim that I paid you and you used it for 3 years, and that's why there's no shtar, and you can take a walk, and he would be believed. The Gemara continues, E delo kotoyin v'omar minoch zavna. If the second purchaser would not say that the fellow I bought from bought it from you, afilu sheni nami lo, then even the second purchaser would have no entitlement to the land. Omar of Sheshis, li olam delo kotoyin le. The second purchaser didn't actually say the claim that the fellow I bought from had paid you and used it for 3 years. Nevertheless, ukagonze, in a case like this, where the seller to the first purchaser, the seller was a sikrikon, toanin liyoresh v'toanin lelokeach. Well, the issue of toanin liyoresh, we're not going to dwell on that now, but this law has to do with the court will intervene on the purchaser's behalf, specifically on a second purchaser's behalf. Namely, if you have a sikrikon that's sold to a first purchaser, and the first purchaser sold it then to the subsequent purchaser, and the second purchaser is, say, challenged by an original owner, the court will say, well, you know, this second purchaser, he bought it from someone who paid you and used it for 3 years. So we will make the claim on his behalf. The edoch, however, an original purchaser, the first one to purchase from the sikrikon, itoyenin, if he verbalizes the claim to the original owner saying, well, I paid you the revia, the quarter extra that I'm supposed to pay you, and I used it for 3 years, then fine. Then he will win out and doesn't have to produce a shtar. He doesn't have to produce a document because of the claim of 3 years having gone by. The ilo toyin, if, however, he, the first purchaser, doesn't make those claims, lo, then we are not going to make those claims on his behalf. Before we continue in the Gemara, we glance at the side where we have a topic heading, the Nosei. Halokeach Sodeh, one who buys a field, Misikrikon. This is a topic we have, of course, been discussing till now. Number two, Ba'an Poros. Lokach Sodeh Mistam Gazlon, Shelo Iyeim Benefoshes. What about the purchase of a field from a common thief who wasn't threatening the original owner's life? The Gemara. Tonu Rabbanan, habo machmas choiv u machmas anporos. The case of machmas choiv is a reference to a goy, a Gentile, that collected a field because of some debt that was owed to him and not paid. So he collected a field. Machmas anporos is a reference to a common thief that steals land without any threat of life. Ein bo mishum sikrikon. The laws that have relevance to the case of a sikrikon that took over land don't apply over here. And now the source continues with something that's not clear, but it says, van poros atzmo tzricho shetishe shneim osor chodesh. This idea of Shnei Moser Chodesh is a law that we saw in the context of Sikrikon, which states that in the event that a Sikrikon expropriated land from someone at the threat of murder, and the Sikrikon holds on to the land for 12 months, and then someone comes to buy the land from the sikrikon, it's sufficient for the purchaser to pay a revia, a quarter of the value, to the original owner, and the purchaser keeps the land. So we mentioned 12 months, namely that the land was in the possession of the sikrikon for 12 months. That is the law of sikrikon. The source opened up by saying that when it comes to Anporos, stam thief, a regular thief, the laws of Sikrikon do not apply. Which would mean that if the land was in the possession of the Anporos, of the thief, the word Anporos has to do with the hefsid, a loss. But if the land was in the thief's possession for 12 months, then that whole deal wouldn't operate, and the original owner can claim his land back at any time. So the opening of the source says that one who received land, bought land from the, in the case of Anporos, so there's no din of Sikrikon. And then the source goes on to say that Anporos atzmo tzricho shetisha shneimo sochodesh. In the case of Anporos, it would have to be in his possession for 12 months. But for Amris, but you said ein bo mishum Sikrikon, that the procedures that apply in the case of Sikrikon do not apply to the case of Anporos. So the Seifa, the end of this source, contradicts what it said in the Reisha in the beginning. Hochi Ka'amar Samar answers, thusly we are to understand things. Sikrikon atzmo tzricha shetishe yud beis chodesh. The reference to yud beis chodesh is not to the Anporos, but rather it's a reference to the Sikrikon case itself. Let's take a look at Rashi, a few lines down from here. Dibor Masul Ein Bo Mishum Sikrikon. Im Shah Biyodoi Shneim Osor Chodesh. If the land was retained by the Sikrikon for 12 months, Loseis Revia Labailim Ketikun Chachomim Viachsik Bekako, the purchaser would then give a quarter of the value to the original owner, as the Chachomim ruled, and the purchaser would maintain the land. Elo, in the case of when we say Ein Bo Mishum Sikrikon, when we say Anporos Ein Bo Mishum Sikrikon, that won't apply. Elo Machsir Loi Hakarka Bechinam. Rather, the purchaser returns the land to the original owner without any payments. The Gabi Sikrikon, who the Chazur V'Nimno. It's only with regard to the Sikrikon that the rabbis issued a ruling. A ruling that works out ultimately for the benefit of the purchaser. The kevon the gomar viakni agav oinus misa. Since the original owner decided to part with his land in order to preserve his own life because of the threat of death, as we said, v'afilu bosu the gozer called the koto liktelua. This ruling applies even after the Gentile authorities ruled that anyone who kills a Jew shall himself be subject to execution. Nevertheless, Mr. Filet Mikamo de Kame Dactol. The original owner is fear-struck by the fellow in front of him, standing in front of him, threatening his life. And the end proves it. Sheinicha b'yodo shnei mosar chodesh. The original owner left the land by the Sikrikon for 12 months. And he didn't scream out. Therefore, the subsequent purchaser who buys it from the Sikrikon pays the original owner the revia, the quarter of the value. The kimlu rabbona devi kachovim oizel gabi lokech revia. It's assumed by the chachomim that the Sikrikon, when he sells, he'll sell it at a quarter less than market value. Lefisha b'chinam, although he got it for nothing. So the purchaser, when buying from the Sikrikon, he's actually paying a quarter less anyway. So pay that amount to the original owner and keep the land. Avol hai. But in the case of Anporos Stam, a regular common thief that takes land from you, lo gomar viakni midi. Original owner has no transfer intention in his mind, parting. Yes, the Gomar Makni, as Gomar Ve'akni means, concludes to transfer the land. He has no thoughts of that kind. V'afal gav, the Shuasu Shemach Sukhidish, even if the land remained in the thief's possession for 12 months, lo bosolo sholachufo, the right time hasn't come in the eyes of the original owner to force him to relinquish his holding. Hilkoch ein mechirosa mechiroklal. Therefore, his sale, the sale done by the common thief to the purchaser, to the lokeach, is of no
consequence of no legal strength. Once again, why? Because original owner never really parted with his land. This is in contrast to a sikrikon who received, who expropriated the land from the original owner, where there was this mindset on the part of the original owner to part with the land. We turn back to the Gemara. Omar Rav Yosef Naktinon. We have a tradition. Ein Anporos Bebovel. Now, that would translate as being that there are no thieves who expropriate people's lands in Bovel, in Babylonia. The Gemara asks for all Kachazino Dika, but we see that that happens. Eloemo Ein Din Anporos Bebovel. The law that we mentioned before of concerning Anporos, the law we said above concerning Anporos resulted in the purchaser losing out. Well, that idea that the purchaser loses out is not so in Bovel, my time. Why do we say that the purchaser is not going to lose out? When we say that, by the way, we're also implying that the original owner is going to lose out, that the purchaser will keep the land he bought. Kevon diko bei davor velo ozil kovil, since there are bei davor, there are courts in Bovel, where the original owner could have issued his complaint that, hey, this guy took the land against my will, etc., and didn't go. He didn't go to complain. Eimo achule ochil. I will say, I therefore figure that he has relinquished his holding on the land. He was moichel. He was forgiving of his ownership of the land. And therefore, the purchaser, in the case of even Anporos, when it comes to Bovel, will be able to keep his purchase. We continue with a name, Gidol Bar Eloi, Kobil Aro Betasko. Mibnei Baga. The issue or the scenario here is explained in great detail in the in Rashi. Let us look at the Rashi together. The Rashi that we're going to look at is in the sixth wide line under the Gemara text. This Gidol Bar Eloi, he is described in the Gemara as having received land betaska. And the word taska, if you just do a little letter switch, you can see the word tax, and that's exactly what it is. He received a piece of land in exchange for paying taxes. How? What does that refer to? So Rashi on B'nei Baika, Rashi says, B'nei Habika, the people of the valley, because a land region where there are multiple fields with different people owning them. Kachoyim in Hogam, the following was their practice. Poiskin mas al kol habika loseis kach v'kach l'shono l'melech. The bika was a fairly well-defined land mass, land section of land. And we said there were multiple fields in it. The government used to issue one amount for the entire region to pay the king. All the residents of the Bika would divide that amount according to the number of fields. And each one would pay the tax in a prorated fashion according to the amount of land that he held. V'noistim le'echot, they would collect amongst themselves all the money and transfer the money to one of them, one of their own. V'hu nosno le'gabay ha'melech, and that one guy would collect all the monies from the different residents and pay the king's tax collector. V'im holach echod ne'asos sadako, say one of the field owners packed out, He went on a trip. Gabay Hamelech Tovea Mibnei Habikah Kol Hamas Sholem. That didn't make any difference to the king's tax collector. There was a fixed amount for the entire Bikah to pay up. The owner of this particular field is just not around. He went away. All the other residents of the area upon whom the need to pay the tax fell, they said to Gittel, who was in our story, Gittel Bar Eloi, they said, you know, this guy, he's gone, he left. You know, you take his land and you pay the tax, the prorated amount for that particular land, and consume the field and enjoy the produce of the field. So in exchange for paying the taxes, he got the right to eat, to consume the produce. We turn back to the Gemara text. Aktim v'yoyv zuzi detras shonin. This Gittel was a very diligent individual, and he actually paid the tax ahead for 3 years. 3 years ahead in taxes. L'soif osa marviso kamoi. As the story continues, the marvis kamoi, the original owner, shows up, comes back. Amru lei, and the original owners told Gittel, Shasa kamaisa diavis achlis. The first year of taxes that you paid, fine, you paid it and consumed the produce. You had a right to that. Hashta, but now we're back on the scene. After a year went by, we're back. Anan yavinon, anan achlinon. We're going to pay our taxes and we'll consume the fruits. Of course, Gittel had been thinking that he's going to have 3 years of produce to enjoy. Surprise, they're claiming, no, the first year that you paid for, fine, you enjoyed it, you were entitled to it. But from this point on, we're going to pay and we're going to eat. The Gemara goes on and says, Osu l'kame de Rav Papa. This case came to Rav Papa. Sovar l'michtav lei tirpo abnei baiga. There was a rough, that's rough. Papa thought that we can write a shtar. Tirpo is a specific kind of court document entitling Gittel to receive compensation for the additional years that he paid on their behalf. Now we should point out that as far as the tax authorities are concerned, what you paid, you paid, and the fact that Gittel paid ahead isn't going to be refunded. So Gittel, according to Rav Papa, was entitled to compensation, and that would be in the form of the court writing a shtar, a tirpa, entitling Gittel to collect land from them, from those guys for whom he had paid the taxes. Let's take a look at Rashi Tirpa. We're in the wide lines, a little less than halfway down. Shtar mi bezdin, a document from the court, litroif mi karkoshlem ma shenosan, entitling Gittel to collect from them that which he paid on their behalf. Sheilu lo bo habaylim litrof mimenu lo hoya mafsid klum. Had the original owners not come back to collect the land from him, he wouldn't have lost out. He would have had an additional 2 years of produce that he would have benefited from. Umeyato sheochlu achirim. Now that others are going to be consuming the land, itol hamelech mo nosoi mehem. The king, he doesn't know from any chochmas. The king is going to collect from them. The subsequent 2 years, it's not Gittel eating consuming the land, it's some other guys, meaning the original owners. The king sees that, you have to pay. V'lo yalu eile b'cheshbon. And that which Gittel had paid ahead isn't going to count toward their requirements. V'nimsa
mafsid mashanos, and the result of all of this is that Gittel is going to end up losing out. So that Rav Popa figured Gittel is entitled to compensation, and that would be through the tirpah that the Beis Din, the court, would write. Let's continue in the Gemara. Amar le Rav Huna brei de Rav Yoshua the Rav Popa. Im Kain, if you're going to create a situation that Gittel should not lose out, a seesaw sikrikon, then you're making it like the case of sikrikon. And we have learned till now that sikrikon is unique, and other cases of loss are not treated the same way. Let's take a look at Rashi. Im kain o sisa hadovar kedin sikrikon. If you, Rav Popa, are going to follow your plan, then you're treating this case like the sikrikon. The amrina b'mishnah chrono. In the latter ruling of the Mishnah, she'eno mafsid klum. The purchaser doesn't lose out. Dekotoni kona v'nisabaylem mai de oizel evikhoven gabei. The Mishnah taught that when someone buys from the Sikrikon, after the land was in the Sikrikon's possession for a year, so he gives the purchaser pays the original owner the amount that he, the purchaser, saved by buying from the Sikrikon. If the original owner has enough money to buy the land, so then he will do so and give the purchaser back his money. V'hai nami lo yafsid mashanos al melech. And this case too with Gittel, you're ensuring that he, by providing him with a tirpa, you're ensuring that he won't lose out. V'gabi kula, v'gavi kula, and collect everything that he had laid out. V'hocha lav sikrikon hu hamelech. We're not dealing with a case of sikrikon. The king's not a sikrikon. Ein lo aleim ki'im hamas. The authorities have no claim other than the tax, and because of that tax, so Gittel was entitled to consume the land. He shouldn't have paid in advance, all in a 3 years in advance. So we now turn back to the Gemara. Rav Huna objected to Rav Popa by saying that if you're going to entitle Gittel to be compensated, then you're treating Gittel as if we apply the laws of Sikrikon. And we said we don't apply the laws of Sikrikon. That's very unique to the case of someone who was threatening the Jews' life. Elo Omar Rav Huna Brei Rav Yeshua. Hiniach Moisov Al Keren Hatzvi. Rav Huna says that Gittel, as far as we are concerned, he has placed his money on the horns of a deer. Meaning, deer, you put something on the horns of a deer, the deer's going to run away with it, and you're left with a loss. And that's what it is with Gittel. He loses out. Zu Mishnah Rishona, Bezin Shachreim Omru, Halokeach Mina Sikrikoin, Noisein Labailim Revia. So the Gemara is quoting the Mishnah that spoke about the original way we looked upon Sikrikon, and then the latter court ruling is that one who buys from a Sikrikon, he pays the original owner Revia. Revia means a quarter. Before we go on in the Gemara, we're going to look at the side where we have a Noseya topic heading, which reads, Sikrikon mocher b'revia pochos. We say that a Sikrikon, when he sells to a purchaser, he'll sell it at a quarter less. Machlekes Rabu Shmuel mahu revia. When you speak about a quarter less, what do you mean by a quarter? Ule dugma, and as an example, sode shove 500. Let's say a piece of land that's worth 500, whatever, $500. You bought from a Sikrikon a piece of land. Now,
we'll speak about a piece of land that at the market value was 500. Lefi Rav, Hoisa Mishalem 400. According to Rav in the Gemara, we haven't seen this yet, but according to the Rav in the Gemara, this purchaser would have paid the Sikrikon 400. Hanacha shel Mea. That's a discount of 100 from the market value. So when you say a discount of 100, Hainu 1/5 Me'erech HaSodah. That's a chamish is 1/5 of the value of the field. So when you get a discount of 100 of concerning a field that on the market is worth 500, and you paid the Sikrikon 400, so you got a discount that we could describe as 1/5 the value of the field, 100 being a fifth of 500. The fi Shmuel, according to Shmuel, regarding a field worth 500, Ha'isa Mishalim 375. You would have ended up paying to the Sikrikon for the field worth market value 500. You would have paid 375. Hanocha Shel 125. That's a discount of 125. Now 125, Hainu 1/4 Me'erech HaSodah. 125 is a quarter of the market value of that field worth 500. In other words, if you multiply 125 by 4, you will get to 500. Now we turn to the Gemara. Hopefully you have a sense of the disagreement between Rav and Shmuel with regard to the word Revi'ah. The Gemara. Omar Rav, Revi'ah Bakarka, Oy Revi'ah Bemois. Ushmuel Omar, Revi'ah Bakarka, Shein Shlish Bemois. The Gemara itself, for me, personally, was rather vague. Rashi helps by elucidating this, as he does so often. Let's read the Rashi together. Omar Rav, Revi'ah Bakarka, Oy Revi'ah Bemois. Oyutein lebailim revia mois shenosan loive kichovim. We're referring to the purchaser, the one who bought from the Sikrikon. He gives to the original owner a revia mois, a quarter in cash, a quarter of what he had given the oive kichovim. Oyutein lo karka, or the purchaser gives the original owner a piece of land, shove revia hamos, that's worth a quarter of what he had paid. If the purchaser bought it for a mona is a hundred zuz, noisein lo revia mona. So the purchaser will give the original owner a quarter of a mona. Oi min hakarka atzmo, or a piece of land, shove revia mona, a piece of land worth a quarter of a mona. Now, if you give a piece of land worth a quarter of a mona, the hainu chamishis shebekarka, that would be a fifth of the land itself. Imabailim chafetz bekarka. This is, of course, if the original owner desires that type of payment. Here we threw in a fifth. In the Gemara, you didn't see the word fifth. You saw revia bakarka or revia bemois when Rav spoke. And revia bakarka, as you can see from Rashi, doesn't mean a quarter of the land, but it's a piece of land worth a quarter of what you paid. And in actuality, a piece of land that's worth a quarter of what you paid will equal 1/5 of the entire field. The Kosova Rav is of the opinion Nechi Chumshe Zovan Min Ha'ovei Kechavim. Nechi Chumshe means less, a fifth. A fifth less is what you had paid the Sikrikon. And now Rashi gives examples. Shove Chomesh be Arba'a. If we're going to use the example of Lumar Almona, so he paid something worth five, he paid four. We, in our introduction, gave a straightforward example, something worth 500, so he paid 400 for it. When we're reading the Rashi, we wrote in some numbers which correspond to Rashi's examples. So, Shove Chomesh, something worth 125, you paid 100. Hilkuch, Yoyiv Lei Revia Mona, therefore, since you got a discount, and you got something worth 125 and you paid 100 for it, so you're going to the difference then is 25. You got it for 25 less than the actual value of 125. You paid 100 for it. You take the 25, you give that's Yoyiv Lei Revia Mona. 25 is a quarter of a mona. A mona represents 100. A quarter of 100 is 25. So you give 25 to the original owner. Oy chamishis hakarka. The piece of land was worth 125. Take one-fifth of that piece of land. That's going to be a piece of land worth 25. Dahainu revia mona, that amount of land, a fifth of the karka in this case, is a quarter of a mona, a quarter of 100. Shakaka nikneis mesikrikin b'mona, a piece of land that you bought from a sikrikon paying 100, shove chameshes revium. It's really worth 5 quarters, which is 125. A quarter of a mona is 25. 5 quarters, 5 times the quarter of 5 times 25, 125. That is Rav's approach. Let's continue in Rashi. Ushmul Umar. Shmuel says, how much does the purchaser pay the original owner? Revia hakarka atzmo noisein lo. A quarter of the land itself. Not like Rav said, who spoke about giving a fifth of the land. No, he says a quarter of the land itself is what the purchaser would give to the original owner if the original owner insists on land. Oy shlish mona, or if it's going to be a cash compensation, it'll be 1/3 of a mona. The Sovar Shmuel, nechi riva zavan. When a person buys from a sikrikon, he's paying nechi riva. What does that mean? Shove arba lokech b'shalosh. Something that's worth 4, you would end up paying 3. Hilkach sodezu shelokach b'mona. Therefore, the field that you paid 100 for shove arba shlishe mona is really worth 4/3 of a mona. So you'd have to take a mona, divide it into 3. You get 33 1/3, and then add to that the amount, 33 1/3, so the piece of land is actually worth 133 1/3. You would take a quarter of that, which is 33 1/3 in land, and give that to the original owner, or you would pay cash 33 1/3, which represents 1/3 of what you had paid. Now we turn back to the Gemara. Meisvei. We're going to now introduce, before we do the Gemara, we have a couple words. Bemai komifligi. What are Rav and Shmuel arguing over? Mor sovar nechi revia zovin. He holds that the sikrikon sells of nechi revia. It's a quarter less. Now we speak about a quarter. This will be, by the way, Shmuel's opinion. It's a quarter of the
total amount. We gave an example. In Rashi, we saw if you paid 100, you really were buying a piece of land worth 133 and a third. Nechi riva revia means that by paying 100, you were paying a quarter less of the total value of the land, which is 133 and a third. So by paying 100, you were paying nechi revia zoven. You're paying a quarter less when you look at the amount from milabar, from the outside, meaning the total value of the land is 133 and a third. You paid 100, so you were paying a quarter less, i.e. 33 and a third is a quarter of 133 and a third. Umor sovar nechi chumsha zovin. Rav holds that when you buy from the Sikrikon, you're paying a fifth less. Now, a fifth means of the total amount, a fifth of the total amount. And the example, we'll repeat the example. When, according to Rav, if you're paying a Sikrikon 100 for a piece of land, you're really getting a piece of land on the market that's worth 125. So you paid 25 less than its market value. What does 25 represent when you look at the market value? 25 is a fifth, because you do 5 times 25, you get to the actual value of the land. So you're paying a fifth less when you look at milabar. Milabar means from the outside, from the total amount. You're paying a fifth less than the total amount. Mesve, we have a Tanaic source. At the end of the Tanaic source, we've dashed underlined the key phrase, which says that you'll pay the Bailam Raviyah Bakaka or Raviyah Bamois. By saying Raviyah Bamois, we're developing, we'll say, a question that represents a question on Shmuel. Because according to Shmuel, you would have to pay the original owner not a quarter, but a third of what you paid the Sikrikon. From that standpoint, that's how we're developing the question. Because when Shmuel spoke, about money, Shmuel himself made reference to Shlish B'mos. And here you have a source that speaks about Revia B'mos. That is essentially the heart of the question. And now we'll go through the entire text, the entire source. Meisvei. It says, Zu Mishnah Rishona. Zu Mishnah Rishona is a reference to the original ruling with regard to the Sikrikon, that if you bought land from a Sikrikon and then you bought it from the original owner who would like second the deal, that deal is off. The owner was only trying to buy time and make sure it gets out of the hands of the Sikrikon so that he could go to court with the purchaser. It was easier for him. However, Bezin Shachrem Amru Halokech Min HaSikrikon Noisin Lebalim Revia. One who buys from a Sikrikon keeps the land. He has to, however, pay the original owner a revia. Viad Bailim Al Hilyona. The original owner has the upper hand. In what sense? Rotsu Bekaka Neitlin. Rotsu Bemois Neitlin. When we speak about the purchaser compensating the original owner can say in what terms he wants to be compensated. He can say, I want to be compensated in cash or in a piece of the land. I would assume a piece of the land that you bought, well, we want that. Amosai, when do we say, thusly, bizman she'ein biyodon likach. That's when the original owner doesn't have enough money to pay the lokeach for the entire land, for the entire amount that he paid to the Sikrikon. Avol yesh biyodon likach, hein koydim l'chol adam. If the original owner has enough money to buy back his land, he has first choice. He has the upper hand, the right to come before anyone else.
Rebbe Hoshev Bezdin Venimnu, Rebbe established a court and they voted. Shim Shwasab, if they Sikrikun Shnei Musa Chedesh, if the land was in the possession of the Sikrikun for 12 months, Kol HaKedem Likach Zocha. Anyone who came first and bought from the Sikrikon, he will keep the land. In other words, an original owner is, if he doesn't make the first offer to the Sikrikon to buy back his land, then anyone else who comes along can do so. Aval noisin lebayim revia b'karka oy revia b'mos. However, the one who does purchase from the Sikrikon has to compensate the original owner with a quarter of the land or a quarter of the money. And we'll assume right now it means a quarter of the amount that he had paid the Sikrikon. So if you say that the purchaser paid the Sikrikon 100, a quarter of that is 25, and that's what he would give to the original owner. And that is a problem for Shmuel. If you notice above, we have little arrows to the right-hand side of the Gemara text. Above, Shmuel made reference to Shlish B'mos. And this Tanaic source is saying Revi'a B'mos. Shlish being a third, the source saying only a quarter. Omar Ravashi, Ravashi defends Shmuel and says, Ki Tanya Hi, the reference to Revi'a B'mos means Li'achar Shebo Mos Liyodo. Rashi explains. Notice three lines from the bottom. Ki Tanya Revi'a B'mos, the source that taught a quarter of the money, La'achar Shebo'u Shlish Hamos Liyad Habaylim. After a third of the amount paid to the Sikrikon reached the hands of the original owner, Kishmuel, as in accordance with Shmuel, Kori Luhu Revi'a. That is called a Revi'a. Daha Shloisha Shlishi Nasan Levi Kechavim. Three thirds he paid to the Sikrikon. Filoze Shlish. And a third of what was paid to the Sikrikon, the purchaser gives to the original owner. Hare Arba'a. So we have four parts, four thirds, if you will. The Hachi Ka'amar. And what the source is saying is, Noisein Labailim Revi'as Hakarka. The purchaser would give the original owner a quarter of the land. Oy Mois Shi'ur Shi'u Revi'a. Or cash, an amount that would be a quarter, kishetitztaref, shalevichovim v'shalbailim. When you add the two together, the amount that he paid the Sikrikon, the idol worshiper, with the amount that you pay the original owner, you shalbailim revi'a b'kulan. That which you had given to the bailim is a quarter of the total amount. The example we used before, we can say it again. He bought the land from the land from Sikrikon for 100, and we say that represents 3/3. Well, so 3 times 33 1/3 is 100. How much does he give? The purchaser gives the original owner 33 1/3. So you take 33 1/3 and add it to the 100. So you get 133 1/3. What is the fraction of 133 1/3 when we say 33 1/3 of the 133 1/3 is paid to the original owner? Well, it's a quarter. 33 1/3 is a quarter of that total amount, the total amount being 133 1/3. So the source, when it says Revi'a B'mos, is referring to looking at the amount that you pay the original owner as a part of the total amount paid out by the purchaser. If, however, you're not looking at the total amount, but rather you're looking at how much does the purchaser who bought from the Sikrikon pay the original owner, we'll tell you a third of what you paid the original, a third of what you paid the Sikrikon, give that amount to the original owner.
I hope it's clear, we haven't been repeating it too much, but all of this idea of the purchaser paying, the original owner, he's paying him the amount that he had saved, that he was hoping to save by buying from the Sigrika. Omar Rav. We continue at the top of Daf Nun Tes. Ano havoy b'minyona de Bay Rebbe. I was in the voting, and we'll say in the part of the court where the voting took place, the court of Rebbe, who established the takona that said kol hakodim likach zocha, anyone who buys first from the sikrikon. Anyone who buys first will end up keeping it. After the land had been in the possession of the Sikrikun for 12 months, say, Kol HaKodim Likach Zocha, that was a conclusion that was voted upon and ruled in the court of Rebbe. So Rav says, I was there. Uminoi Didi Monu Bereisha. Here the Gemara is discussing voting Talmudic courts in order to reach decisions. So Rav says, I was there when the voting took place, and the deliberations concerning the matter started with me. They asked my opinion first, and I stated my opinion, and that represented the first vote. The Gemara asks, as far as legal rulings are concerned, Vo anan tanan, have we not learned Dine Momenis, Vitaris, Vitumois, Maschilimina Godol, Vidine Nefoshis Maschilimina Tzad? When it comes to financial matters, that's Dine Mos Vitaros, matters concerning ritual purity, that's Taros Vitumos, the decisions and positions that are stated, you start with the Godo, with the leader, with the greatest one in the court. When it comes to capital cases where someone's life is at stake, so then we start from the least of the opinions. The question is, Rav, in the context of Rebbe's court, would have been viewed as the youngest one, the least of those that were assembled. The Rashi on the the second line from the top, Uminoi Didi Monu Bereisha, Mimeni Shalu Tchila Bashura, in the row of sages that were assembled, I was the first one consulted with, Kishenu Yoshvin Ma Dati Notef, asking how does my opinion veer, in which direction, Vahu Hoya Beinoni Lomin Agdolim Agtanim. There are two versions in Rashi. What was Rav's status amongst them? The second point Rashi says is that Rav was in fact the least of them. Rashi continues, when it comes to Dine Momenus, and this is where our question is, we start from the greatest. When it comes to figuring out, taking a vote on, as to establish a majority, you would start from the Godol. Min hatzad, that expression, when you're dealing with capital cases, min haktanim, v'lo min hagodol. We don't want to start with the greatest of them. Shelo yilameid choyva. If you would start from the greatest of them in that court, and he would say guilty, v'ashar nichnoim miponov, shelo lach l'golov. The rest would be automatically, would be subservient to him. And they wouldn't argue with him, Mishum lo sane al Rav, because of a drosha on the posuk, which is darshaned to mean, do not respond to the Rav. You can't differ with the greatest one. Ubedine nefoshes mu'ilai kroper kamen sanhedrin, lo katesu letoiva v'chule, v'lo yilmedu zechus, and they won't have any more chance of trying to find merit to spare the defendant. That's when you're dealing with Dine Nefoshes, and we strive to find innocence to try to spare and defend the defendant so that we don't have to execute him. So by starting from the Godol in a capital case, you would be locking out, preventing the possibility of sparing him. Rashi goes on, actually, let's hold off on the Rashi. Rashi is relevant to the response of the Gemara. So the question once again is, how could they start their counting in a dine momentous case, as we're dealing here with purchase of fields from Sikrikons, etc.? How can Rav be the first one to offer his opinion when it comes to dine momentous, we start with the leader, the greatest of them? The Gemara answers, and we have a double underline to highlight this name, Rabbi Rabo Bre de Rava. We have a couple of memros of his in the Gemara. So Omar Rabo Bre de Rava, V'itema, another version of the name is Rabbi Hillel Bre de Rabbi Wallace. Shiny Minyona the Bay Rebbe. When it comes to the voting system in Rebbe's court, it's different. Dekulu Minyonayo Minatzad Havu Maschilin. All of their countings, all of their the taking of the vote, the placing forth of your opinion, which represents one of the votes, starts from the tzad, from the least of those assembled. Rashi explains the reason for that is that the pasuk we just referred to, Losano al Riv, which is written without a yud, so you end up darshaning Losano Rav, that you're not to disagree with the greatest one. There is no distinction between the court, the capital cases, and the financial cases. So just like in capital cases where a person is being judged for possible execution, we start with the least there so that we don't have a situation where the Godol Shebehem would rule guilty and no longer be able to find any merit. So just like in capital cases we start from the tzad, so too in financial cases we do not make a distinction. That's the style, that's the derech, that's the approach of the Bei Rebbe, and with that we understand how Rav was the first to speak up. The Gemara continues, V'yomar Rabo Bre de Rava V'itema, another version is Rebbe Hillel Bre de Rebbe Wallace. At this point we have a new marking, this volcano shape, and on the side we indicate these are highlights word miyamos from the days of b'mi motzinu teru gdula b'malkom echad. And what we'll discuss was there people, personalities that had within them Torah u'gedula. Torah means the greatest Torah scholar, and also gedula, the greatest, we'll say the greatest public figure, the greatest amount of wealth, if you will, concentrated in one person. Torah u'gedula in one person. So Rabbi Rabo tells us, Moshe v'ad Rebbe. From the time of Moshe Rabbeinu until Rebbe Yehuda Hanasi, lo motzinu Torah u'gedula b'malkom echad. We don't find greatest in Torah scholarship and greatest in gedula. We'll refer to gedula for the time being, as Rashi says. He says uba oisher, wealth. We don't find those two attributes in one person. From Moshe Rabbeinu had that, and Rebbe had that. But everyone in between was either very great in Torah learning, but was not the leading man of wealth. Or you could have certainly wealthy people that didn't contain Torah. The Gemara asks, hello, is that really so? Oh, have Yoshua. Was there not Yoshua, Moshe Rabbeinu's successor? Was he not the greatest in Torah and also the wealthiest man of his time? No. Have Elazar. He had competition. There was Elazar HaKayin. Veha have Elazar. Well, in Elazar's lifetime, was he not the, after Yoshua passed away, so he was alone there on the top? No. Have Pinchas. There was his son, who was able to rival his father. Question, was there not Pinchas? After Elazar died, you would say you have Torah Gedula in one person. The Gemara says, well, Havu Zakenim. You have the the elders that received Torah from Yoshua, who lived on beyond Yoshua, who were no less than Pinchas. V'ho have Shaul. What about in the time of King Saul? Was he not the greatest in Torah and also the king greatest in wealth? Have Shmuel. He had competition from Shmuel. But v'ho noch nafshei. But is it not so that Shmuel died before Shaul? So Shaul was there on the top in wealth and in scholarship. This is when we say that he was on top, when we say Torah du Mokam Echad, Kulu Shani Kormi, we're looking for someone that throughout his years he was Torah and Gedula on top in both. What does Kulu Shani come to exclude? So we look at Rashi. Rashi is further down. There is Kulu Shani, Misha'omad B'Gedula, Te Torah Gedula B'Mokam Echad. From the point that you reach the climax or being the leading Torah personality, from that point, there was no one else that would rival you. V'zeh betchilas gedulaso lo yochin hoya b'Torah. Shaul, when he started off in his greatness of Torah, he wasn't alone. Because when he started off in his greatness of Torah, Shmuel was already there. The Gemara asks, "What? V'ha'avid David? What about David HaMelech? Have Ira Hayiri? There was this gentleman who was a gadol b'Torah. V'ha'nach nafshe, but did he not die? So that would leave David HaMelech alone. Why then do you say that from the time of Moshe till Rebbe you don't find Torah gedula b'malkim echad? The Gemara says, "Kulu shoni boinan. We require." This during all his years. And as we said before, using David here as the example, when David reached greatness in Torah, Ira Hayiri had already been there. He was already there. So David HaMelech from the beginning of his Torah greatness was not alone. Question, V'havi Shlomo, what about Shlomo HaMelech? No, Have Shimi ben Gera. There was Shimi ben Gera, who could rival Shlomo Melech in Torah scholarship. V'ha katle, but Shimi ben Gera was killed. So, doesn't that leave Shlomo Melech as Torah gedula b'mokim echad? No. Kulu shoni karminon. As we said before, at the point that Shlomo would have reached greatness in Torah, in order for him to be Torah gedula b'mokim echad, he would have had to been alone at the point he reached his greatness, but that wasn't so. Shimi ben Gera preceded him in Torah greatness. Question, V'havi Chizkiah, what about the great King Chizkiah? Well, he wasn't alone. Have a Shevna. Question, but Ha'ikta, but Shevna was killed, leaving Chizkiah alone as greatness in Torah and wealth. The Gemara says, it's true. Shevna was killed. However, Kulu Shani Kwanrinon. If you want to claim that Chizkiah was Torah gedula b'mokim, it would have to be that at the beginning of Chizkiah's outstanding Torah level, he was alone. But that wasn't so. At that point, Shevna had preceded him. Question, V'have Ezra? Was as well, V'have Nechemia ben Chachalia. Ezra was not alone in his greatness. Nechemia was a rival. Omer Rav Acha Brei de Rava Af Ani Omer. Rav Acha says, I also have something to say on this. Yemois Rebbe v'ad Rab Ashi lo motzi the Torah gedula b'mokom echad. From the days of Rebbe, Rabbi Yudah Nossi, who is credited with the editorship of the Mishnayos, until Rav Ashi, who is credited with the authorship of the Talmud Bavli, we don't find Torah gedula b'mokom echad. More as v'lo have huna bar nosan. How can you say that Rav Ashi was alone? Was there not Huna Bar Nosan? So we always respond, Shiny Huna Bar Nosan, the Makef Havakayef Le the Rav Ashi. Huna Bar Nosan subjugated himself. He literally bent over to Rav Ashi. He allowed himself to be, we'll say, subservient to Rav Ashi. And as a result, we're not going to describe Huna Bar Nosson as being a rival of Ravashi. So that if Ravashi issued a ruling, even if Huna Bar Nosson had a different opinion, he would have yielded to the authority of Ravashi. So Ravashi can be described as Toru Gdula B'Mokom Echad. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.